been talking about supplementing your faith as an introduction to those things that are sometimes called Christian graces. They're also called Christian virtues, but they might very well be called Christian qualities, and we'll begin talking about those in a couple of weeks. But we want to talk again about faith, because there's just a whole lot of things about faith that people do not understand. Most people think of faith as simply believing certain things. Well, if I believe in God, I've got faith in God. If I believe that Jesus is the Son of God, then I've got faith in Jesus as the Son of God. If I believe all the right things, then I have the right faith. But it's more than just believing certain things. And so we've been talking about faith in hopes to help us understand that faith is something that acts. Saving faith is something that acts. The Bible does sometimes mention a faith that does not act, but James tells us that that faith is dead, being alone, just as a body without the spirit is dead. And so we're going to look at Hebrews chapter 11 this morning and notice several instances of faith in action. And that's what the book of Hebrews, or at least Hebrews chapter 11, is all about. It's all about faith. As he begins to talk about faith, he describes it or defines it as the evidence of the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen, chapter 11. In verse 1, and then he begins to give us many illustrations from the Old Testament, the patriarchal age, and the Mosaic age, to illustrate that point that faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. In chapter 11, in verse 4, he's talking about Abel, the second person to be born on this earth, as far as we know. Cain first and then Abel. Later Seth, but there are also daughters whose birth is not actually recorded, but they are mentioned in passing, that Adam and Eve also had daughters as well as sons. By faith, Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gift, and through it he, being dead, still speaks. I've mentioned from time to time that there was really no religion, in the strict sense of that term, in the Garden of Eden. There was no need for religion. Religion, as far as the Bible is concerned, that word comes from a word that means to tie back, or to bring back into association with, to bring back into fellowship with. And true religion is the means whereby man regains his fellowship with God, and the means that by which man does regain his fellowship with God was revealed from heaven. That is true religion. It did not originate in the mind of man like every other religion did. True religion went through three stages. It went through the patriarchal stage, it went through the Mosaic stage, and it is now in the final stage, as far as earth is concerned, the Christian stage, the church stage. But there's only been one religion, and that is the means whereby man has demonstrated his faith in God by acting upon what God has told him to do. God told Abel how to worship. God also told Cain how to worship. Abel complied with God's instructions, and thus God was pleased with Abel's sacrifice, and he was pleased with Abel. He was not pleased with Cain's sacrifice, nor was he pleased with Cain, because Cain's sacrifice did not comply with God's instructions. Cain did not offer by faith what he offered. He offered not what God wanted, but what he himself wanted to offer. And so it was by faith that Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain. What made his faith? Well, it was by faith. And as we have talked about earlier, according to Romans chapter 10 and verse 17, faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of Christ. or the Word of God in some translations. So both Cain and Abel had heard what God wanted in sacrifice, but Abel complied and Cain did not. Either Cain heard what God expected, or there was no way for Cain to worship by faith. If there was no way for Cain to worship by faith, then God would have been unjust in not accepting his sacrifice. But God is just in rejecting the sacrifice of some and accepting the sacrifice of others, and that implies that he has revealed his will regarding sacrifice. And of course, our sacrifices are revealed to us in the New Testament. They are not animal sacrifices, such as characterized the patriarchal and the Mosaic age. They are spiritual sacrifices. We sacrifice ourselves, our lives. There's the sacrifice of praise. There's sacrificial giving, which necessarily follows the sacrifice of ourselves. Offer yourself a living sacrifice, Paul told the Romans in chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. Well, that was the way Abel was. He had faith in God. He didn't just believe that there was a God. He believed, as Hebrews 11, verse 6 tells us, that there is a God and that God is the reward of those who seek him. And so Abel sought God. How? He sought him through the sacrifice that he offered. That is, he sought a right relationship with God. It's not like the cosmonaut who was the first person to go into outer space back in the late 50s. Yuri something, I believe his name was. He came back and said, "I didn't see God anywhere. I can't believe he didn't see the moon and the stars and the sun and probably saw the other planets." Well, those, they're not God, but they are evidence of God. Now, we don't see God when we look at trees and when we look at other plants and animals, but we see evidence of God. If nothing ever was, nothing would ever be. Evolutionists and other atheists tell us that there was a time when there was nothing. Well, again, if nothing ever was, nothing would ever be. Nothing comes from nothing. So there has always been God. And God created all other things that exist. We must believe that, and we must believe that God is the reward of those who seek him, and believing that we will seek him, we will put our faith in action. And so that's the two parts of faith, believing that God is, and seeking him. The seeking him is the action, you see. There's got to be faith in action. Then he says in verse 7, "By faith Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness, which is according to faith." There's never been a worldwide flood. Some say that it never rained, but I don't think that is true. I think it had rained, but it had never flooded before. Certainly not the world. But God told Noah, "I'm going to bring a flood, and it's going to cover the highest mountains. And mankind is going to be destroyed, but I want you to build an ark." He didn't tell him to build a boat, by the way. The ark that Noah built, the word ark means basically box. It was not designed to go anywhere. It was just designed to float. And as a result of Noah and his wife and their three sons and their three sons' wives being inside the ark, and the ark floating during that flood, they were saved from the destruction wrought by the flood. Well, how did Noah know to build an ark? Well, God told him to. Did Noah believe that God was going to bring a flood? Yeah, he must have, because he acted, you see. He was divinely warned by God. And then he moved or acted with godly fear in a particular way. He prepared an ark for the saving of his household. Did he not trust God to save his household? Yes, he did trust God to save his household. That's why he built the ark. If he had not built the ark, he would not have trusted God to save his household. Building the ark was a manifestation that he trusted God, that he believed God, that God was going to bring a flood, and that he trusted God to save himself and save Noah and his family. And when his faith acted in the direction that God told him to act, and according to this, and that's Hebrews 11, 7, according to Genesis chapter 6 and verse 20, it says, Noah did all according to the commandments of God. He acted on his faith. We see faith and action. In verses 8 through 10, we read about Abraham. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance. God told Abraham, I want you to get out of your house, your home, your country. I want you to go somewhere you ain't never been before. And you don't know the way. But I'm going to show you where to go. I'm going to show you how to get there. I'm going to make sure you get there. Abraham said, all right. He believed that God was, and he trusted God to get him where he told him to go, and so he left out. As far as I know, he didn't have no map. He certainly didn't have a GPS. But God got him there. And when he got there, he never owned a piece of that property except the cave of Machpelah that he bought when Sarah died as a burial place for her. But he purchased a piece of land in the land that God said he was going to inherit. So he obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith he dwelt in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise, for he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Abraham wasn't overly concerned about his owning any of that land. Abraham's main concern was the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. And he knew that if he wanted to possess that city, he was going to have to act on his faith. He was going to have to go to that place. And he did go to that place. But he lived there as a sojourner. He lived there as in a foreign country. He never built a house. Never put up, as far as I know, a fence. He lived there as if he might be called upon to leave any day. Because he didn't know what life had to offer. He didn't know how long he was going to live. He lived 175 years. He lived to see, by the way, Jacob and Esau. When you're reading through Genesis, that doesn't occur to you. It looks like he dies before they're born. But Jacob and Esau were 15 years old when Abraham died. And so, yes, he did dwell in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. What about Esau? He wasn't an heir. He was a descendant of Abraham through Isaac, but he was not an heir, not a spiritual heir, because the promise was continued through Jacob. But Abraham obeyed. His faith acted. By faith he obeyed. By faith he dwelt in the land of promise. Not only that, but down in verse 17, by faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, in Isaac your seed shall be called, concluding that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from which he also received him in a figurative sense. Remember that God had told Abraham, he didn't go into a great deal of specificity. He wasn't very specific about it, but he said, yeah, for your seed, all nations are going to be blessed. Abraham didn't have any children. He thought at first the promise was going to be fulfilled through his male servant, who was like a son to him, Eliezer. God said, no, you are going to bear a son. Abraham and Sarah, Sarah said, well, I'm barren. I can't have no kids. Just take Hagar. Maybe God wants you to bear a son through him. Her. They took Hagar. And she bore a son named Ishmael. I want to learn what that name means. I know the ending means God. But that's what they named that son of Hagar, Ishmael. But then God said, no, you don't get it. Sarah is going to bear you a child. And he will be the seed of promise. That is, the Messiah would come through his line and not through the line of Ishmael. That was a real test when God said, first of all, in Isaac shall your seed be called, and then he says, by the way, I want you to kill him. I want you to take him up on a mountain. Don't worry about where that mountain is. I'll show you where it is in time. I want you to take him up there, and I want you to offer him as a sacrifice to me. I want you to kill him. Abraham didn't ask any questions. He rose early the next day, the day of that. That was supposed to take place. And God did indeed show him where to go, and he had servants with him. But they got to the foot of the mountain. Abraham said to the servants, you stay here. The lad and I will go up, worship God, and we'll come back. And there, going up the mountain, they've got a torch with fire, or a means to produce fire. They've got wood for the altar, but they don't have a lamb. Now, Isaac had been around his daddy often enough. He knew that a sacrifice to God required an animal such as a lamb or a ram. And on the way up the mountain, Isaac said, well, Thomas, I see the wood and the fire, but where's the lamb? Where's the ram? Abraham, God will provide. Now from this we know that Abraham had every intention of killing Isaac, believing that God would raise Isaac from the dead and then provide a lamb whereby he could worship and praise God in that way. Actually, God sent an angel to stay his hand as he raised his knife about to plunge it into Isaac's body. God stayed his hand and said, no. Now I know that you fear God. And that you have not withheld your son, your only son, whom you love from me. But behold, there's a ram in the thicket there, you offer him. And so he did. Well, that's faith in action. Never questioning God. Matter of fact, we can say that would be the ultimate degree of faith. Here you are 99 years old when he finds out his wife, who is 89 years old, is going to bear him a son in 1 year's time. And so he did say, well, wait a minute now, God. Listen, I'm 99 years old. I fired Ishmael, but that's been like 16 years or something. 16. I'm too old now. And Sarah, she's barren. He didn't argue. He believed God. And he trusted God. But when God said, I want you to kill your son, through whom the promise was to be fulfilled, he said, all right. That's faith in action. That's the ultimate degree. But God's not going to expect that of anybody today. He doesn't command anybody to offer up their son or daughter as a sacrifice. And yet people balk at what God does command. And they do not understand the nature of faith. Faith does not balk at God's, well, a dead faith, but not a living, saving faith. Then in verse 32, after mentioning some other specific persons, he says, beginning in verse 32, "And what more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah." Those were all judges. You can read about them in the pages of that book. They were all men of great faith. Did they have failings? Yes, they had failings. Did they sin? Yes, they sinned. But they were men of faith, and they were men who had faith that acted. Also, David and Samuel. David, the second king over Judah. Samuel, the first of a long line of prophets, the last of the judges. Also, David and Samuel and the prophets, he could have gone on and on and listed several acts of faith on the part of all those men. Did David or only have David's sin? Be it all in all, God still characterized him as a man after my own heart. David repented when he realized the magnitude, the enormity of what he had done with reference to Bathsheba and her husband Uriah. He's not going to go into detail, but he's just reminding him he could go into detail. All these people, through faith, subdued kingdoms. David subdued kingdoms. He went to war against various nations by the commandment of God. Solomon never went to war. He subdued kingdoms in another way. But all these, they subdued kingdoms, they worked righteousness, they obtained promises, they stopped the mouths of lions. There are two cases that I can think of that were, one, David, a lion and a bear at separate times, I imagine, would attack his father's flock, and David was watching over them, and he smote the lion, he smote the bear. Then, of course, Daniel, we all know about Daniel being thrown into the lion's den for what? What kind of a crime did he commit? He prayed to God three times a day. And for that, he was thrown into the lion's den. His enemies knew that they could convince King Darius to pass a law saying that for the next 30 days, no man could make any petition to anybody but me. They knew that Daniel would violate that law. Because they knew Daniel's character, they knew his habits, they knew he was a man who would pray three times a day. And so, they plotted. But Darius, he passed the law. And then Daniel's enemies waited outside his window at the time of day when they knew he would be praying so they could be witnesses. And they heard him praying to God. And they go running to King Darius, or Darius. David done violated the law. What are you going to do? He had already set the penalty for that. Cast into the lion's den. What was Darius to do? Okay. Cast him in. But Daniel spent the night in there, and the lions never bothered him. And so they let him out. He had suffered the penalty. He had been cast into a den of lions. And because he was so mad at Daniel's enemies, Darius had the enemies thrown into the pit. And to demonstrate that it wasn't that the lions weren't hungry that they didn't tear Daniel from limb to limb. All those men were dead before they hit the floor of the den. Because of the lions. They were hungry. They were voracious. They had an appetite. But God did not allow them to eat Daniel. They quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong. Paul talks about that in 2 Corinthians chapter 12. He said, "In my weakness I am made strong," because that's when I need God. And that's when I see just how strong God is. It's when I'm at my weakest. And I believe that's what he's talking about. Out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. That's not talking about aliens from outer space. I remember a Twilight Zone episode one time where everybody was paranoid and they thought these people were aliens from outer space. No, it's going to talk about foreigners, people from another country, their enemies. That's what God meant when he said in our reading in Hosea this morning that he would save Judah, but not by the bow, not by their military might, but by his power, his providence. It is said that the fellow in Assyria that was going to take Jerusalem during the time of Hezekiah, he said, well, I had Jerusalem surrounded like a bird in a cage. And then the field mice came and ate my equipment, and I had to go back to Assyria. What really happened was that an angel had been sent through the camp and killed his soldiers by the thousands. And he did not have the forces then to attack Jerusalem. And so no, it wasn't anything that Judah did, but God was protecting them. Now later God allowed them to be delivered into captivity because of their sins. But that's faith in action. Women received their dead raised to life again. Widow of Zarephath is one occasion of that. She was not even an Israelite, but she had faith in God. And Elijah was sent to raise her son, so that Elisha also raised a widow's son from the dead. Even after Elisha died and he was entombed, this other fellow later, hundreds of years I think later, he was killed and they threw his body into the tomb of Elisha. And as soon as his dead body hit the bones of Elisha, he was revived. And so Elisha raised one man from the dead posthumously after he himself was dead. Well, what was their motivation? Others were tortured, not accepting deliverance. Why? That they might obtain a better resurrection. There are two resurrections. There's resurrection to damnation, there's resurrection to life. So aren't everybody alive when they're resurrected? What depends on your definition of life? If you mean will they breathe, well, yeah. But they'll be immediately separated from God eternally if their lives were not right with God when they die. So a better resurrection would be the resurrection of the just, the resurrection unto life. Eternal fellowship with God. Still others had trial of mockings and scourging, yes, of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, were tested, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains and dens and caves of the earth. Well, I guess that's the last one.
Faith in action. A wide variety of actions, because not every situation demanded the same action. Abraham didn't have to build an ark. Noah didn't have to offer up his son as a sacrifice. Abraham didn't have to be baptized. I had a discussion not too long ago. He used Abraham as an example. Well, Abraham wasn't baptized. That's right. He wasn't commanded to be baptized. Well, Naaman was. Naaman didn't just have to be baptized. Naaman had to be baptized seven times. Well, he had to baptize the third. In the River Jordan. He said, well, wait a minute. Abana and Pharpar up there in Damascus, they're much cleaner rivers than the Jordan River. Why couldn't I just wash up there and be clean? Well, that wasn't what God said. He said, wash in the River Jordan. Dip, which is what baptism is. Dip seven times in the River Jordan, and your flesh will be clean. And he did, and it was.
Now, God doesn't call on us to do all those things. You don't have to build an ark. You don't have to offer your son as a sacrifice. You must submit your life as a sacrifice to God. But a living sacrifice, not a dead sacrifice. But you cannot afford to love you're alive unto death. In Revelation 12 and verse 11, there were many who loved not their lives unto death. That is, even in the face of death, they did not love their lives. They did not consider their physical lives so important as to be worth any sacrifices lately. At least Proverbs 23, 23. I don't have to look that up. Buy the truth and sell it not. I used to want to say, well, if we're not supposed to sell the truth, from whom are we supposed to buy it? If it's wrong to sell it, how can it be right to buy it? But he's not talking about literal selling and buying. He's talking about sacrifice. Sacrifice anything and everything for the truth, and don't sacrifice the truth for anything. The truth is too precious to sacrifice. So we must embrace the truth by asking.